Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter and Peter Jones as Bunter, with Gabriel Wolfe as Chief Inspector Parker. Strong Poison by Dorothy L. Sayers. Adapted in 6 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 3, Norman Urquhart. Lord Peter Wimsey has proposed marriage to Harriet Vane, who's in Holloway awaiting retrial on a charge of poisoning her ex-lover, Philip Boyes, with arsenic. In his attempts to establish Miss Vane's innocence, Wimsey has enlisted the help of his friend, Chief Inspector Parker, who's now come up with some evidence that suggests Boyes may have committed suicide.
Here's the lady you're anxious to meet, Peter. Mrs. Bullfinch, allow me to introduce Lord Peter Wimsey.
Oh, please, I'm sure.
How do you do, Mrs. Bullfinch?
Now, Mrs. Bullfinch, before her union with Mr. Bullfinch last August, was the life and soul of the saloon bar, the Nine Rings in Gray's Inn Road. Ah, known to all for her charm and wit.
Oh, go on, you're a one, aren't you? Oh, don't you pay no attention to him, your lordship. You know what these police fellows are.
Bad dogs. But I don't need his testimonials. I can trust my own eyes and ears, Mrs. Bullfinch. And I can only say that if I had had the happiness to make your acquaintance before it was too late, it would have been my lifetime's ambition to wipe Mr. Bullfinch's eye.
Oh, you're every bit as bad as he is.
Worse. Now, Mrs. Bullfinch, if you wouldn't mind beginning at the beginning, telling his lordship your story.
Oh, about the young man and the white paper package.
Precisely.
Why, of course. Well, my lord, before I was married, I was barmaid at the Nine Rings in Gray's Inn Road, as the chief inspector says. Miss Montague I was then. It's a better name than Bullfinch, and I was almost sorry to say goodbye to it, but there, a girl has to make a lot of sacrifices when she marries, and one more or less is nothing to signify. Well, as I was saying, I was working there up to my marriage, and I remember one evening in June. It wasn't far off the longest day. June the 20th, I think.
That's the evening we're interested in.
I think it was then. But as to the time of night, that I can tell you for sure, knowing how keen you techs always are on the hands of the clock. It was 10:05. I know, because a customer had just asked if the clock was right. Anyway, suddenly the door was pushed open, hurried-like, and a young gentleman comes in, almost falls in, I might say, and he calls, "Give me a double brandy, quick!" And then he puts his hands across his waistcoat, like so.
I see. Go on, Mrs. Bullfinch.
Well, I mixed him a double with just a splash of soda, and he gulps it down and says, "That's better," and sits down. Presently, he asked me for a glass of water, and I fetched it to him, and he says, "Sorry if I've frightened you, but I've just had a bad shock, and it must have gone to my inside. I'm subject to gastric trouble," he says, "and any worry or shock always affects my stomach."
That would have been his interview with Miss Vane, Charles. She said it was pretty acrimonious.
Just so. And then what happened, Mrs. Bullfinch?
Well, then he takes out this white paper packet with some powder in it, and he says, "Perhaps this will stop it," he says. And he drops the powder into the glass of water and stirs it up with a fountain pen and drinks it off.
Did it fizz or anything?
No. It was just a plain powder, and it took a bit of time to mix. He drank it off, and then he says, "Thanks very much. I'd better go home now in case it takes me again." And he raised his hat. Oh, he was quite the gentleman, and off he goes.
How much powder do you think he put in?
Oh, a good dollop. Near a dessert spoonful, it must have been.
And what happened to the packet?
Ah, there you are. We just got the last customer out when I see something white on the seat. I picked it up and see it was the paper packet. Oh, just one of them chemist packets, you know, with the ends turned up and a label stuck across, but there wasn't any of the label left. Anyway, I was going to chuck it on the fire, and then I thought, no, the gentleman might come back for it. So I stuck it up on the shelf behind the bar and never thought about it again till your policeman came round about it yesterday.
We searched the place for it but can't find it, of course. However, if we do, Mrs. Bullfinch, we may ask you to come in and identify it.
Well, you know where to find me, Chief Inspector.
Yes.
Anything else now?
No, thank you, Mrs. Bullfinch. Thank you very much for coming down here.
Oh, don't mention it. Goodbye, then, my lord.
Goodbye, Mrs. Bullfinch, and thank you. Whoopee! We will beat you yet, Mr. Chief Inspector Parker.
I hope you do, old man. If that packet's found and shown to have contained arsenic, nobody will be happier than I. But I don't think there's much chance of that, do you?
Mm.
And if the packet isn't found, well, Mrs. Bullfinch's evidence might persuade the jury to give Miss Vane the benefit of the doubt.
But it will hardly establish her innocence. You're quite right, Charles, and that won't do. I want to see Miss Vane absolutely cleared, and the blame, if there is any, fixed in the right quarter. And that means hard evidence.
Precisely. Well, if you do find out anything which really proves that we've been on the wrong track, you'll let us know, won't you? We don't want to make large and ignominious public mistakes.
If Philip Boyce did kill himself, why did he do it? That's the question we must answer. I don't believe it was because he was heartbroken after Miss Vane left him. I don't even believe his interview with her that evening had anything to do with it. He had something else on his mind. Money problems, perhaps.
Hmm?
Norman Urquhart.
The cousin?
Yes. Boyes lived in his house for some time, and they dined together on the night in question. If anything was troubling Boyes, he might have mentioned it then.
That's true.
I think I'll go and see Mr. Urquhart at his office. He's a solicitor, isn't he?
Yes, in Bedford Row.
Yes, I'll pop along tomorrow, and at the same time, I think I'll put a spy into his domestic establishment just to pick up any gossip, don't you know? And I think I know the very man for the job. Bunter!
My lord?
Bunter, do you feel at your brightest and most truly fascinating? Does a livelier iris, winter weather notwithstanding, shine upon the burnished Bunter? Have you got that sort of conquering feeling, the Don Juan touch, so to speak?
My lord?
You have a good, upstanding, impressive figure, if I may say so. A bold and roving eye when off duty, a ready tongue, and I am persuaded you have a way with you. What more should any cook or parlourmaid want?
I am always happy to exert myself to the best of my capacity in your lordship's service.
I am aware of it, Bunter. Morning by morning, my coffee is brought, my bath is prepared, my razor laid out, my ties and socks sorted, and my bacon and eggs brought to me in a lordly dish. No matter. This time I demand a more perilous devotion. Perilous for us both, my Bunter. For if you were to be carried away a helpless martyr to matrimony...
Who is the party, my lord?
There are two of them. Two ladies lived in a bower, Binnery, oh, Binnery. They are part of the establishment at Mr. Norman Urquhart's house in Woven Square. The parlourmaid is one Hannah Westlock, a woman in her 30s, I fancy, and not ill-favoured. The other is the cook, a fine woman, Bunter, on the mature side, but none the worse for that.
Certainly not, my lord. If I may say so, the woman of ripe years and queenly figure is frequently more susceptible to delicate attentions than the giddy and thoughtless young beauty.
True. Let us suppose, Bunter, that you were to be the bearer of a courteous missive to Mr. Urquhart. Could you, in the short space of time at your disposal, insinuate yourself, snake-like, as it were, into the bosom of the household?
If you desire it, my lord, I will insinuate myself to your lordship's satisfaction.
Noble fellow. In case of any action for breach of promise or any consequence of that description, the charges will, of course, be borne by the management.
I am obliged to your lordship. When would your lordship wish me to commence?
As soon as I've written a note to Mr. Urquhart, I will ring.
Very good, my lord.
Oh, have another crumpet, do, Mr. Bunter. More tea won't be a moment.
Thank you, Miss Westlock. You were saying, Mrs. Pettycam?
Oh, just what a dreadful, wicked woman she must have been, that Harriet Vane. A torturing of the poor soul in that long-winded way. Bashing on the head or the hasty use of a carving knife when roused, I can understand. But the horrors of slow poisoning is the work of a fiend in human form, in my opinion.
Fiend is the only word. I quite agree.
And the wickedness of it, Mr. Bunter, quite apart from the causing of a painful death to a fellow being. Why, it's only the mercy of Providence we weren't all brought under suspicion.
But you had no difficulty in proving that it hadn't happened in this house, surely? Miss Westlock gave her evidence so beautiful at the trial, I'm sure she made it clear as clear could be to the jury.
Well, I was never one to be shy. And then, what with going through it all so careful with the master, and then with the police, I knew what the questions would be and was prepared, as you might say.
I wonder you could speak so exactly to every little detail all that time ago.
Well, you see, Mr. Bunter, the very morning after Mr. Boyce was took ill, Master comes down to us and he says, I'm afraid Mr. Boyce is very sick, he says. He thinks he must have ate something as disagreed with him, he says, and perhaps it might have been the chicken. So I want you and Cook, he says, to run through with me everything we had for dinner last night to see if we can think what it could have been. Well, sir, I said, I don't see that Mr. Boyce could have ate anything unwholesome here. For Cook and me had just the same, except the sweet omelette, sir. And we're as right as rain, I said.
And I said the same. Such a plain, simple dinner as it was, too. No oysters, no mussels, no anything of that sort, as it's well known. Shellfish is poison to some people's stomachs. But a good strengthening drop of soup, and a bit of nice turbot, and a casserole chicken with turnips and carrots done in the gravy, and a jam omelette. Now, what could be lighter and better?
Nothing, Mrs. Pettycat. Mr. Boyce made the omelette himself that night, didn't he? At the table.
He did, yes. And well I remember it. For Mr. Urquhart asked particular after the eggs. Was they new laid? And I reminded him they was some he brought in himself that afternoon from that shop on the corner of Lamb's Conduit Street, and that one of them was a little cracked. And he'd said, we'll use that in the omelette tonight, Hannah. And I brought out a clean bowl from the kitchen and put them straight in, the cracked one and three more besides, and never touched them again till I brought them to table.
And both Mr. Boyce and Mr. Urquhart partook of the omelette, of course.
Oh, yes, heartily.
And as for the chicken, Mr. Bunter, that was a little beauty. Oh, it seemed a shame to casserole it. But Mr. Urquhart's very partial to a casserole chicken. He says as there's more flavour to them that way. And I don't know but what is right.
Well, it's certain there was nothing unwholesome about that anyway, Mrs. Pettigan. Otherwise you and Miss Westlock could scarcely have escaped it.
No, indeed. We finished it every bit, except a little piece I gave to the cat.
There was a drop of soup left. Not much, just a wee drain. And Mr. Urquhart took that up to show to the doctor, and he tasted it and said it was very good.
And as for the burgundy, which was the only thing Mr. Boyce had to himself like, Mr. Urquhart told me to cork it up tight and keep it. And just as well I did, because of course the police asked to see it when the time came.
It was very far-seeing of Mr. Urquhart to take such precautions when there wasn't any thought at the time but that the poor man died naturally.
Yes, we put it down to him being a solicitor and knowing what ought to be done in case of sudden death. Very particular he was, too. Got me to put a bit of sticking plaster over the mouth of the bottle and write my initials on it so that it shouldn't be opened accidental.
How very fortunate. Many's the case his lordship has seen in which an innocent man has been brought near to the gallows for lack of a simple little precaution like that.
And when I think how near Mr. Urquhart was to being away from home at the time, the thought fair gives me palpitations. Called away he was to that tiresome old woman what's always a-dying and never dies. Why, he was up there again only last week.
Which old woman is that, Mrs. Pettycat?
Why, his great-aunt, Mrs. Rayburn, up in Windle. Rich as sneezes she is, by all accounts, and no good to nobody, for she's quite childish, so they say. A wicked old woman she was, too, in her day. Queen Victoria wouldn't never allow her to act before the royal family. She knew too much about her goings-on.
An actress, was she?
Oh, yes, and a very beautiful one, they say. Though I can't rightly recollect what her stage name was. Oh, it was a queer one, I know. Hyde Park or something, Gardens or something like that. Anyway, her other relations, Mr. Boyce's side of the family, they wouldn't have nothing to do with her, despite the money. Only Mr. Urquhart. And I don't suppose he wouldn't neither, only he's her solicitor, and it's his duty to do so.
So I suppose he stands to gain something when she pegs out, eh?
That's as may be. He's not a talker. But it stands to reason he wouldn't always be tearing off to Westmoreland for nothing. Though I couldn't care myself to put my hand to money that's wickedly come by. It would not bring a blessing with it, Mr. Bunter.
Oh, it's easy talking, my girl, when you ain't likely to be put in the way of temptation. There's skeletons in many a cupboard, if the truth were known.
Ah, I believe you. I've seen diamond necklaces and fur coats that should have been labelled wages of sin if deeds done in the dark were to be proclaimed upon the housetops, Mrs. Pettigrew.
Indeed, yes, Mr. Bunter. Well, Hannah, come along now. We must be getting on.
As you say, cook.
Then I shall take my leave, Mrs. Pettigrew. Thank you for your hospitality.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Bunter. I hope as you'll come again. The master makes no objections to respectable gentlemen visitors at tea time. Wednesday is my half day.
Mine's Friday. And every other Sunday. If you should be evangelical, Mr. Bunter, the Reverend Crawford in Judd Street is a beautiful preacher.
I shall look forward to that, Miss Westlock. Oh, incidentally, if Mr. Boys was also a nephew of old Mrs. Rayburn's...
Yes?
Did he have any expectations from her?
Ooh. Well, I dunno. He might have done, Mr. Bunter. Had he lived...
Mr. Urquhart, we'll see you in just a moment, my lord, if you care to take a seat.
Yeah, thank you.
I trust you will excuse me if I return to my work, my lord. We are short of staff at the moment, our young lady clerk having just left us to get married, so there isn't a moment to spare in the office.
Of course. Have you not tried getting temporary assistance?
Oh, it's not easy to find anyone, my lord. Some of the work is confidential, and an atmosphere of permanence is desirable.
Lord Peter, I'm so sorry to have kept you. Won't you come in now?
Thank you, Mr. Urquhart.
Please sit down.
Thank you.
Now, what can I do for you?
Well, I'm interested in the vein poisoning trial. Act in for the defence, don't you know? And I wondered if I could bother you with a few questions. I'm afraid I'm being a frightful nuisance and all that.
Not at all, Lord Peter. I'm only too delighted to help.
Yeah, thank you. Well, can you tell me then, had Mr. Boys any sort of financial expectations? I had an idea there was a rich aunt somewhere.
Oh, no. Unless you're thinking of old Cremona Garden. She's a great aunt on his mother's side. But she hasn't had anything to do with them for many years.
The celebrated Cremona Garden, eh? Well, I'm dashed. I'd no idea she was still alive.
Yes, she lives in Windle in Westmoreland. I've just been up there to see her. She's been quite childish, poor old lady, for the last 5 years or so.
Poor old Cremona Garden. She must be getting on now. Surely she can't last much longer.
As a matter of fact, we all thought she'd gone last week. Her heart is giving out. She's over 90 or so.
Has she any other relations besides you now?
No. Not that my going up there can do her any good, but I'm her man of business too, so it's just as well I should be on the spot when anything happens.
Oh, quite. And being her man of business, of course, you know how she has left her money.
Well, yes, of course. Though I don't quite understand, if you'll forgive my saying so, what that has to do with the present problem.
Why, don't you see? It just occurred to me that Philip Boys might have got himself into some kind of financial mess-up and have, well, taken the short way out of it. But if he had any expectations from Mrs. Rayburn, and she was so near to shuffling off this mortal thingamy, well, he'd have waited, what?
Oh, I see. You're trying to make out a case for suicide.
Aha.
Well, I agree with you. It's the most hopeful defence for Miss Vane's friends to put up. And as far as that goes, I can support you. Inasmuch, that is, as Mrs. Rayburn did not leave Philip anything, and he knew it.
Knew it?
He asked me one day, and I was obliged to tell him that he hadn't the least chance of getting anything from her. The will had been made. And as she was by then childish, there was no possibility that it would ever be altered.
I see. Is it much, by the way?
Pretty fair. About 70,000 or 80,000.
Very sickening for him to think of all that good stuff going west and not getting a look in oneself. By the way, how about you? Don't you get anything? Oh, I beg your pardon. Fearfully inquisitive and all that. Deuced impertinent. It's a failing of mine. You know, wash it out. I'm sorry.
There's no real reason why you shouldn't know. Though one's professional instinct is to avoid disclosing one's client's affairs. As a matter of fact, I am the sole legatee.
Oh, interesting. So one great nephew gets nothing, and the other scoops the pool, what?
Well, that was because... Well, since we've gone so far, I will tell you what the will actually says. Excuse me one moment. Mr. Pond, could you bring me in the deed box labelled Raeburn?
Yes, Mr. Urquhart.
I haven't got the will itself here, Lord Peter, but I have the draft. This is all rather irregular. But there are times when too much discretion is as bad as too little. thank you, Mr. Pond. Now. Dear. Doesn't seem to be... Oh, of course. How forgetful of me. I'm so sorry. It's in my safe at home. I got it out for reference last June and quite forgot to bring it back. However, the gist of it was...
Well, never mind. There's no hurry. If I called at your house tomorrow, perhaps I could see it then.
By all means, if you think it important.
Thank you, Mr. Urquhart. Then I'll call round at 9 o'clock, say. Is so dashed curious, Bunter, is that everybody is so remarkably helpful about this case. Particularly the sleek and fresh-faced Mr. Urquhart. They all cheerfully answer questions that one has no right to ask and burst into explanations in the most unnecessary manner. None of them seems to have anything to conceal.
If Mr. Boyce committed suicide, my lord, surely none of them have anything to conceal.
True, oh Bunter. Well, I must patter along to Woburn Place and take a look at this jolly old will. Oh, by the way, there is a vacancy for a confidential female clerk at Mr. Urquhart's office. Could you ring Miss Climpson and ask her to send along one of her ladies? Just to pick up gossip, tell her. Oh, and not too much face powder, and skirts the regulation 4 inches below the knee. The last girl left to be married, and the head clerk's feeling anti-sex appeal.
Very good, my lord.
I'd better make quite clear the family connection of the Boyses and the Urquharts, Lord Peter, so that you will understand the will.
All righty, huh?
The common ancestor is old John Hubbard, a highly respectable banker at the beginning of the last century. He had 3 daughters, Jane, Mary, and Rosanna. The eldest, Jane, married a man called Henry Brown, who was a schoolmaster and quite repellently moral. They had 1 daughter, Julia, who eventually married the Reverend Arthur Boyce and was the mother of Philip Boyce. The 2nd daughter, Mary, accepted the hand of 1 Josiah Urquhart, and they had a son, Charles, who entered the solicitor's office, did well, and finally became a partner in the firm. He was my father, and I'm his successor in the legal business.
All clear so far?
Good. Now, the 3rd daughter, Rosanna, was made of different stuff. To the horror of her parents, she ran away from home and went on the stage. They erased her name from the family Bible. She determined to justify their worst suspicions. She became the spoilt darling of fashionable London, and under the stage name of Cremorna Garden, went on from one disreputable triumph to another. Well, the long and short of it was that the eldest sister, Jane, would have nothing to do with the family black sheep. My grandparents were less straight-laced and were polite in a distant kind of way. And in consequence, she eventually put her business into my father's hands. Well, the old lady never forgot or forgave anything. The very mention of the Boyce Brown connection made her foam at the mouth. Hence, when she came to make her will... Well, see for yourself.
Yeah, thank you. March 14th, 1921. Oh, I see. Yes, here we are. All the rest of my property, whatsoever and wheresoever situated, I give to my great-nephew, Norman Urquhart. And so on, so on. In token of gratitude shown to me by my said great-nephew, Norman Urquhart, and his father, the late Charles Urquhart. And to... ensure that no part of my property shall come into the hands of my great-nephew Philip Boys, or his descendants. And to this end, and to mark my sense of the inhuman treatment meted out to me by the family of the said Philip Boys, I enjoin upon the said Norman Urquhart as my dying wish that he neither give, lend, nor convey to the said Philip Boys any part of the income derived from the said property. Etc., etc., etc. I see. Well, that's pretty clear. I'm pretty vindictive. If Boys had been in any financial trouble, he couldn't even have expected help from you.
Unfortunately not. I should have been morally bound to refuse.
Quite. Well, thank you, Mr. Urquhart. I'm glad I've seen that, very glad. It makes the suicide theory a good deal more probable.
A letter, my lord.
Thank you, Bunter. Ah, it's from Miss Murchison.
My lord?
Miss Stimpson's lady, the spy we planted in Mr. Urquhart's office. Interesting. She seems to think that Urquhart may have been involved with the Megatherium Trust before their big crash.
Indeed, my lord. Hardly the type of enterprise one would expect a respectable solicitor to be involved in.
Certainly not. I'll ask Freddy Arbuthnot to look into it. He understands stocks and... Good God.
My lord?
This letter was typed on a machine with a newly chipped P and an A slightly out of alignment.
Indeed, my lord.
And so was the will Urquhart showed me this morning.
My lord.
That will, Munter, was supposed to have been typed 8 years ago.
In that episode of Strong Poison, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael. Bunter, Peter Jones. Chief Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe. Norman Urquhart, John Pullen. Hannah Westlock, Christine O'Zan. Mrs. Bullfinch, Francis Jeter. Pond, Peter Woodthorpe. Mrs. Pettican, Anne Jameson. Norman Urquhart was adapted by Chris Miller from the book Strong Poison by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.